Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we're going to be talking about Avengers, 2012's Avengers. We're revisiting it for our Infinity Saga rewatch, and I am pumped to talk about this classic of all movies, right? Like, it's not even just a classic of in Marvel, so I'm ready to talk about it. Let's do this right after this. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I'm Ashley Coffin.
Ashley, what's happening, my friend?
Oh, man. I've been waiting for this since we started talking about the rewatch. Because I love all the movies, but I mean, this has been like, I've been waiting for this.
Right. Yeah. There's certain ones that are just amazing to watch, amazing to talk about. And they're just like moments in cinema history, you know? Like, and this is one of those. This is them pulling off something that no other, like, series has ever pulled off in this way. We've talked about it a little bit in the past, but there's other series in the past that have had like really good running connected universes, but nothing where they like in the matter of 4 years they built a expansive universe and that had such a huge crossover event that it took the world by storm. And like movie is what propelled Marvel beyond like, oh, they're a little studio starting out doing good movies. This just made them the thing. I mean, this is what every other movie studio has been trying to copy ever since, and no one's done it successfully, you know?
No. I mean, it really doesn't get much better than this movie. I can't even think of how many times I've seen it, right, and I still enjoy it every time. And I think it's paced well, it's executed and acted perfectly, like the humor's good, which is important. You know, I feel like we're going to talk about Joss Whedon throughout of it, but
sure, yeah,
his formula for what he did in TV shows, he brought a little of that here, mm-hmm, and it did really work. Like, you can tell everyone working on it is really just giving their best, and it shows.
Yeah. Something we talked a lot about actually last week's episode with Jeff on Thursday, what was the Friday episode that we dropped. We were kind of, I don't know how we got on it, but it made me look at this movie through a different lens, which was, what is everyone's point of view like? And something we talked about, We often talk about what is everyone's motivations, and like, mm-hmm, they're very similar ideas, but like motivation and point of view are very different, but also very related often. And it's just really interesting to looking at it through that lens and thinking about like what everyone, like, they do such a good job of every character has their own point of view, their own motivation. One of the things we were talking about is, this is, you would have hated this conversation. We joked about you turning it off once we said temporal. But like, we talked about the idea of this like sort of temporal point of view where Thor is always looking at the future in these early movies because he's thinking about being king. He's always looking at the future. Nat, mm-hmm, is always looking at the past, trying to like fix her ledger. Like, Tony is very like not, he's like in his own world, sort of. And like, Cap is just looking at what's in front of him. He's like in the moment.
Yeah. Well, Cap is stuck in a moment. And I think that's something true. I really took out of watching this is I was paying attention to everybody's costumes. And like, in this movie, Cap dresses like my grandfather. He's got the pleated pants. He's got the tucked in, pulled in, the long, the jacket. Like, he just looks like somebody still who hasn't quite, you know, acclimated to the time, which is exactly what it's supposed to be. Even his hair is still very, you know, 40s, 30s, whatever it was. And yeah, like, you, even Banner, like, they do Banner's costume a little bit, but it's a little disheveled, it's a little dirty, and it has the hints of purple, but it's not like in your face purple. Tony's still dressed like a pretentious, you know, teenager with his Black Sabbath, you know, stuff. It's funny. It is interesting to look at.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cap is such a fun character in this movie.
I'm mad at him most of the time, but I'm like, God, you're just so cute. He really fills out those sweatpants. Like, you get the first like real, oh, that's America's ass, mm-hmm, in the very first scene when he's, I was like,
God, he's in like a huge sweatpants thing, and you're still like,
God damn his yams. Look at him. I did laugh in that scene though, because I'm like, why did he pick up that punching bag and walk away? You know, they were all laid out there. Like, it was at, he's at the gym where the punching, mm-hmm, bags live. They're all laid out on the ground. Oh, and then when he's leaving with Fury, he just picks one up and he takes it with him. I'm like, where are you going with that?
Okay. Because he's got some more punching to do wherever he's going. I was talking about this point of view thing, just to finish what I was saying. Like, there's a, so I started watching this thinking about that, because one of the things we were talking about is like, that those four we kind of like talked about, they're sort of the way they view the world and the way they're looking in like temporally in time. And then like I got to Hawkeye, and immediately the first thing he says is, "I see better from far away." And then he says something which I thought was so cool. Right after saying that line, he says, "Doors open from both sides," talking about the Tesseract. And it's right. like something no one else had seen because they're looking at it too closely. They're looking at the Tesseract. But just the idea of a door, he saw from far away as the concept of a door and how it opens from both sides. It's just really cool, the way they make every character have their own point of view in a very defined way. And mm-hmm. I think, or at least they're defining it as they go. And it just, I think these characters are so well done for that reason. Really, really cool.
I do really, and I think this might be my favorite movie with Barton. And I don't know whether it's because half the time he's a bad guy. And I really enjoyed it. He's a good bad guy. He's a huge menace for them. Like he is. Big problem. For more sure. than he is. And then, like, he's a problem for the bad guys. But man, is he a menace against the Avengers themselves.
Right.
Especially with all the arrows. It's like, wow, he made a special arrow that goes into a special little socket that's on the bridge that's going to ruin everything.
It's a really great point. Everyone always kind of makes fun of Barton for being sort of the powerless hero on the team.
Myself at times included. Sorry,
Martin. Yeah, me too. It's funny to talk about it that way, but I think, and this, there's also something to say, like people have always complained about, this movie is really, I know he's introduced in Thor, but this movie is really where you get to know Barton.
Right.
But a lot of the complaints I've heard over the years is you don't really get to know him because he's taken over most of the movie. So what's really clever about that, I never realized until you said that, is like, Hawkeye needs to be introduced in a way that doesn't make him a laughingstock. And one way to that is to show how much of a threat he is to the Avengers. And it's not really that he's a threat physically. I think any of them could probably take him if it was one-on-one battle, but he's the tactician. He sees things from far away. And he knows all of their secrets. He knows all the S.H.I.E.L.D. secrets. So he is such a threat when flipped to the other side that it gives you this sort of like... It gives him an aura of respectability for the rest of time. Even though we make fun of him for not having powers or whatever, mm-hmm. clinch up Legolas, all that stuff. Like he's
God, it's a good line.
It's such a good line.
My favorite part with Barton is when he's up on the building and he sees Nat go by and, you know, Loki's chasing him. He's like, "Oh, I got him." It's like a simple mm-hmm. little spot. He says it so casually, and then Loki thinks he's all cool because he grabs it and then it explodes, and I'm like,
"Yes." So many great little reversals in that last battle sequence. And like keeping attention for like, what is it? Like 40 minutes to that battle?
It is a long, long time of boom, boom, bangs.
I paused it to like, we're at the final battle. How long is left? And it was like 50 minutes was left on the movie. I was like, dang, dude. That is a long, and some of that's credits and some of that is...
Well, the end's very long. The ending. End just kind of keeps going and going. Like after they solve things, that's another like 15, 20 that you're like, oh, there's still 20 minutes left. Okay.
Maybe. I didn't think it was as long as that, but it's definitely a little bit.
I know that from the soundtrack because I love the end of this. This is such a good soundtrack. Like we get introduced to Alan Silvestri's theme. Mm. And I mean, that's like that flick you in the nose. Like I remember hearing it for the first time in the opening and you're like, oh my God, someone who's as into scores as I am. I was like this, it has my favorite probably music moment of all of the movies in it. It's the end where when Banner shows back up, like the right before, you know, that's my secret cap. I'm always angry.
It's
just the full strings doing the theme and then it just builds and builds and builds. And then we get our first group shot. So all of that together is making my little heart explode. Blowed when I was in the movie. Like, I'm like, am I going to cry or throw up? I don't know what's happening. You know? It's just sensory overload.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's, I've criticized this movie in the past. Not really criticized. I think this movie is the lightest on character development, or one of the lightest on character development in the MCU.
Yeah.
But... that's why, in many ways, that's why it works so well, is because it's not about the character development. There is some, and I really tried to watch it for that this time because, like, in the past, I haven't. So, like, I've always think about this movie as, like, bang, bang, pow, pow, lots of action. And there definitely is some really cool character development. It's just spread out to so many characters that it doesn't feel like much momentum is happening in the in the characterizations. But, like, that's what's so... It is using the MCU, like the idea of the connected universe, in the way it is meant to be. We've got the characters. They're developed. They're there. And then we just have this amazing thing.
Well, that's what we did with the other movies, which other places don't do, is give the time to the characters to develop it so that when you jump into the group movie, I'm going to use Justice League as an example, like you didn't earn that. heavier people didn't, like, I'm like, not a couple people didn't have their movies, but they were at least introduced in them and not just like, they're on a hard drive and Lex Luthor's whatever. They gave them the time to be able to throw you into this and be like, okay, you should kind of know who they are, but you don't have to if you're a dirty casual, you know?
Yeah. I was really torn. I was needing to watch this movie, and I've been starting to show my girlfriend the MCU. She had never watched anything. So she watched Iron Man 2 with me, and like sort of what I think... Yeah, that's about it right now. And so we started watching through it, and I really had to watch this last night, and I really wanted to watch it with her because I was like, I want to show it to you. And I was like, no, you won't. I feel like it's the worst one to watch if you don't know anything in a way. Because it's so boom, boom, pow, pow that if you don't know the characters, it feels very empty almost. But I just started thinking about, she's not going to know who Thor is. She doesn't know what an Asgardian is. Like all this stuff is not really well developed in the film. It's like very much thrown in there. You're supposed to know who these characters are and just jump in and do it. And it's all those references to Loki's attack and when he's like, why were you building these weapons? Because of you. And it's these things we talk about how they WandaVision was required to get Multiverse of Madness, those little things of where the universe is connected to the point where you can't miss anything. I feel like that's something that was going on from the beginning because you really can't. The only one you probably could have missed is Thor. Hulk. You don't have to watch Hulk before you need Thor. You need Iron Man. You need Captain America. You have to see those movies before watching this and understanding who the characters are and what's going on.
Well, that's why I like how that they kind of really started that, and I'm glad that they leaned into it. It's sure, you can just come do this, but you definitely should watch these other movies just to enjoy it. And everybody was like, okay, we'll watch them.
Yeah.
We'll do it. We'll do the work.
Well, and it's also doing the work was different then because it's one a year or two a year, maybe. It was this very sparse thing, and now it's so much. And that's
it, so much.
It's what we've talked about so much is we're in for it. We're loving it. Feed us all the Marvel, but it's what point do you oversaturate to those casual fans who aren't wanting to see every little thing and then making things dependent on each other? It starts to become an issue.
Yeah.
But back in this moment, you really could just come on the ride with me. It's only one movie a year, two movies a year, maybe three once you get close to Endgame, but at that point, so many people were on the ride, and I do think that the saturation of Phase 4 sort of I still love a lot of the stuff. I don't think all of, I'm not a big criticizer of Phase 4, but I think a lot of the lack of success is because it's the casual people are falling off because they feel
it's
like
still
they're
not very
lost.
Connected.
Well, that
they're
too.
They're trying.
That too. It's this weird catch-22 where you feel because it's not connected, you can skip something. But once you're skipping things, you start to fall out of it. Falling out of the universe. And I'm not doing that. But I know that I think that's a lot of what's going on with the sort of diminished returns and the diminished viewings and stuff. And the less cultural impact. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to impact your snacking this Christmas season, you need to hit up nuts.com. They got all your favorite snacks. They got candies like butterscotch, fudge, licorice. They have these amazing bourbon pecans, sweet and spicy pecans. Oof, that's so good. Pecan brittle, butter toffee pecans. It's just going to make you feel like just Christmas in your mouth. You need to get to nuts.com. It is a one-stop shop for freshly roasted nuts, dried fruit, sweets, pantry staples like specialty flours, and more. Their wide selection means there is something for everyone. What did you think of nuts.com's wares, Ashley?
I love it. I love nuts. I eat them constantly. I always use them as a substitute when I'm dieting or just trying to feel better.
Yeah.
They make me feel. I always have them in the morning with fruit and so these were perfect. Plus going to New York City a lot as a kid, did you ever get they have these nut stands, warm nuts, and it's always cashews, almonds, and pecans. Their bourbon pecans were the closest thing that I've gotten to that same flavor that those ones have. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's just a little nostalgia.
Yeah. No, I know exactly. I've had those street vendor nuts before.
The best.
I do
this
love
is
them.
this is like pretty much the same thing. So I was thrilled about the bourbon pecans.
Well, and I think it's for this reason. They really focus on quality. They roast their nuts and pop their popcorns, which is another thing they have, on the same day they ship. They really, really deliciously fresh. Satisfaction is guaranteed. I just really had a, they were really great. Really great stuff. Like you said, the bourbon pecans were one of my favorites, and also the dried mango was one of my favorites. I really loved that. So if you guys want to try these or send them to a friend for the holidays, right now nuts.com is offering new customers a free gift with purchase and free shipping on orders of $29 or more at nuts.com/MCU. So go check out all the delicious options at nuts.com/MCU. You'll receive a free gift and free shipping when you spend $29 or more. That's nuts.com/MCU. You know who's nuts.
Who?
Loki. Loki's a little Loki. Nuts in this one.
Listen, I love evil Loki.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I like that they push it too with this one, because it's like, oh, you just, you can't help but like him. But that Phil Coulson stuff, that's a little difficult to swallow.
Oh, yeah. Man, it was so, that's the thing, like watching this movie now with all the context of years of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and seeing who Coulson is here and seeing all that. Like, I don't know how much you know, like, I know you haven't seen all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, like, some of the things, like, do you know the stuff with, like, who, like, the Security Council? With this, so I'm getting his name wrong. Hold on, who plays Gideon Malik? It's something Booth. Maybe I do have it right. Gideon Malik. Powers Booth. That's what I was gonna say, but it didn't sound right in my head. So one of the sort of main Security Council guy is named Gideon Malik. Or, I'm sorry, his Powers Booth is the guy who plays him. And they never officially say it's the same guy, but it clearly is. And in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he comes back as that character who's on the Security Council, and he is one of the heads of HYDRA. And so, like, you kind of get this, when you're rewatching it after knowing him for a couple of seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's really cool to see him in this, like, shadowy figure, and you hear his voice, and you know who it is because you know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's really fun. And just, like, the first scene, you see Coulson walking around, like, taking orders from Fury. Coulson goes on a really cool journey for seven seasons of that show, where he starts off as, you know, he's the middle manager. He's leading a team, of course, but he also has bosses, and he's kind of doing what they say. And by the end, he's throughout the series, he's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so, like, he once it falls, he, like, takes control of S.H.I.E.L.D. and becomes the leader of it. And so it's really cool to see, I don't know, just this version of Coulson sort of like a yes man to Fury and being like, yes, sir, you got it. And when he says, it'll be about an hour before we have it clear, and he just says, do better. And it's like, that's not the Coulson we know from S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like he develops into such a leader on that show that him just being told to do better was so funny to me. It's like, and I love it. I love that that's a journey he takes. In the first season, he's very much still that guy, but by the end, he's completely a different guy. He's like led for years, and then eventually, like, he's doing something totally different at the end. Really, really great to see those little, like, Easter eggs, and it just made me think a lot about, like, where HYDRA was going. Like, when the Security Council sends those two guys with the bombs, the two rogue birds, as they call them, I was wondering, like, someone on that ship has to be more, like, loyal to the Security Council than they are to Fury. Like, sure, they're his bosses, but, like, maybe it's just a power structure thing, but, like, it made me think, like, especially with power with Gideon Malik, that character being on the Security Council, it made me for sure think that, like, those were HYDRA dudes, right? Like,
oh yeah, happen, well, for sure, send for sure, because that's a little extreme.
Oh yeah,
not knowing if a nuke is gonna stop the alien invasion, but you're gonna nuke all of Manhattan anyway. Yeah. I don't know, that doesn't seem like something anyone would do.
Yeah, not smart. I mean, like,
that's some HYDRA stuff.
It is some HYDRA stuff. It's very much like, well, they don't mind doing the bad thing, and they want the world for themselves. They don't want this other, the Chitauri to take it. So they're like, we'll take these Chitauri out.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, apparently just guns took them out, but they didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it was the nuke in the end that took them out. Like, it's the nuke hitting the, like, the, whatever.
The important ship.
Yeah.
Not the Eiffel Tower and everything. Not the Eiffel Tower. Jesus, I'm not tired. not hitting the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's funny because I'd like to think, I do think sometimes that if it wasn't a Joss Whedon movie, if they would have even killed Coulson off, because that's such a Whedon thing to do. He loves a meaningful death of an enjoyable character. He does it through all of his films. I don't know. I wonder if someone else was doing it, if they would have actually killed that character off, because he loves that.
He does. Just loves it. And I love it too. I think that and it is very much a Joss Whedon thing. He's done it in many of his properties. And it's like, you kill someone off to let the audience know the stakes. Like, that's a Joss Whedon thing, forwards and backwards, through almost every one of his major properties. Someone in, like, the final battle, or the final battle of the season, someone that you really care about is going to die, and it's going to rally the troops and make you think that there's a moment in Serenity. I won't spoil it, but like in Serenity, one of the characters dies, and then there's a moment like 10 minutes later where there's this despair, and everyone's like, it looks like everyone's gonna die. It looks like it's gonna be a full party
it's
wipe.
It's really bad.
And like they're all look like they're gonna die, and because that character you love just died, it feels like it's possible. If no other character had died in the movie, I don't think it would have felt possible. But like, because of that, it feels, oh man, he's killed one of them. He might kill all of them. You know, it's like really, really intense. So I'm on board. I dig it.
Yeah, I'm so glad he gets his last little dig into with Loki. Mm-hmm. Like, he tricks him and gets him to kind of come over to start. Like, I don't think you understand the plow. Mm-hmm. He's like, that's what it does.
Yes.
You just love it. And you're like, oh man.
That's what he does. His does line is so Coulson. Just like, I love it. I love it so much.
I do like to think that Coulson gave Fury the idea to use what happened, and it was not some kind of like trick, because Hill's like, you know, those weren't his thing. Those were not in his pocket. They were in his locker. Mm-hmm. But Coulson was the one who was like, oh, this will bring them together. I'm like,
yeah, he said that it was always going to need someone to die to make them bring them together. He doesn't say those.
Yeah, so he kind of gave him the idea to do that.
Yeah, I wonder if he would have done it anyway, but I do think it kind of like gives, I often think about that, because there's a real ethical issue there of, like, you're lying to people. It's basically propaganda. You're lying to people to convince them to go to war, you know? Like, how ethical is that? And in this situation, it's sort of, like, is waved off because he gives him permission, basically. He doesn't actually say that, but the only thing I think he didn't give him permission, I don't think he would let him destroy those cards.
No, they were vintage.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, he not only took them out of his locker, he had to take them out of those little plastic protectors. You know Coulson would have had those little plastic protectors. They would not have just been cardboard in his pocket. No way. Mm-hmm. Or just cardboard in his locker. No way. He would have had them in, like, acid-free little baggies to protect the cards.
I'm like, where did he get the blood? Did he go like...
Yeah, he had to go dip it through. Like, yeah. That fury. And actually, I was talking earlier about the different characters and like their points of view. I was thinking about Fury, and Fury's point of view, Fury's thing that he sees that no one else does is the, like, who the other characters are. He kind of sees the whole board, you know what I mean? Like, he sees everyone's motivation, and it's just really interesting the way he sort of manipulates everybody to do the thing by sending Nat to get Banner and not the Hulk. Like, that's such a master stroke, because he's not asking for, hey, come be a violent Hulk. He's saying, we need you for your brain, like the thing that you value about yourself, we also value, and that gets him on board. And then of course he wanted the Hulk for a fight, but like, he didn't say that. It's really clever.
He's that's why I love the scene at the end when he finally, it's just him, Tony, and Cap at the table, and he's finally like, there was an idea, you know, and he says the whole speech. He's like, yes, we were making these weapons, but it's because of this, this, and this, because they're not screaming at each other like they are in the other room when they were all getting influenced by the scepter. But I mean, he's not wrong. You know, it's not wrong if this was actually what was happening and there were aliens and whatever coming down that could just completely obliterate us. We got to do something.
Yeah. And he says, I never put my full chips behind that play. Talking about the Hydra weapons, he's like, I never put my chips on that. My chips were over here on you guys. Like, I was betting on you guys. And it's like, it's clear from this movie that Fury, while he's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., he doesn't have all control. The Security Council's also pushing ideas and making them do things. And so I have a feeling like he didn't want them to make these weapons of mass destruction, like they say, but he wanted to build the team, and that's what he does.
Yeah. What's the bald guy with the glasses who's Hydra that we always see throughout the whole thing? I cannot remember. Sitwell? Yeah. That was it. Every time I see him, I'm like, God, I'm like, there you are, you weasel.
It's really fun. Again, just talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he's one of the characters. He, like, leaves on episode 17 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he leaves and says, I got to go get on the Lemurian Star. And that's the boat he's on at the beginning of Cap. Yeah. And so it's, like, just so connected. Really, really great. I love that.
That's fun. That is fun.
Yeah. It's one of the, that show has its amazing moments and has its misses, but like the connectivity they were able to do in the first season is just like really cool. Yeah, it's good. And I know most people, a lot of our listeners have seen it, and like it's just the connectivity of you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show about S.H.I.E.L.D., and then that comes out on Tuesday, and then on Thursday they drop the Hydra reveal in Winter Soldier, and then immediately on Tuesday you had an episode where you find out people in the team that you've been watching were Hydra. And it's just like, oh my Lord. Like, it's just so cool.
That's fun.
And it was like so for us. Like, it was exactly for the people who are like watching every week on TV and then going to the movies and then immediately watching the TV show again. You know, like they didn't like give it a buffer week or anything like that. They just did it. I love it. I love it so much.
I love the opening with Nat, because it's not like we haven't been introduced to her and don't know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. But God, that her intro is so awesome. She beats their ass in bare feet. And her stunt woman, Heidi Moneymaker, is amazing. She's so good.
Yeah.
And it just brings this whole new level. Like, you saw it in Iron Man, but it really brings a whole new level to her because she isn't a super powered person. Mm-hmm. But God, the way that she can fight, it's not that it's obtainable, but you're just like, maybe one day I could work out and do that. You know what I mean? Like, wow, she's beating up all these guys. It's so great.
Right.
And aliens.
Oh, man. When she fights some of those Chitauri. She's
ripping their throats out.
Yeah. And when she jumps up and catches that one, she's like, I got a ride. I could use a lift, though. And like Cap tosses her up onto that ship. I love it.
Favorite part of that scene is he takes a beat to be in awe of what she did. Like, he stops, he watches her, and he smiles until he gets shot at and snapped back into it. And everybody should be doing that with Natasha Romanoff.
Absolutely. And then, we've talked about it before, but like the other thing they really introduced in this movie, which goes on to be a thing for her all the way through Black Widow, is the idea that she uses people's underestimation of her against them. She does in that first scene when she's tied to the chair, where the guy underestimates her, and so she's able to get all the information. And then later, she does it with Loki. He underestimates her and thinks he's got her, and he's twisting her. And she knows the like pain. She can tell he's the kind of man who likes to cause pain. So he lets her think he's causing pain until he reveals the information he needs. And then she does the same thing to Dracov in Black Widow. It's just so good. I love that through line with her. Like, not only is she physically impressive and amazing, but she has this like really cool sort of trick that she pulls. And I'd like to see more of her. I wish there'd been more movies focused on her throughout this entire thing.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, I know. I love Loki's like expression when he realizes like what's happening, because he thinks he's, you know, on top of the world. I love that he called her a mewling quim, and I think they should use old timey insults more often in movies, just because it's hilarious. I mean, it just means whiny baby, but it sounds so much worse.
Yeah, it does. It sounds really I don't know, gross somehow.
Yeah, and it's not. It just means whiny baby.
Yeah,
but still. Yeah, his face, and then just her, and then what she's able to do with Barton, and then seeing her use a different tactic with bringing Banner in just shows like the range of the things that she can do. But that's where it goes with the good acting. Like, if they didn't get these great actors, that scene where he slams on the table and he's like, stop lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell she's actively very scared.
Yes.
Like, she's got fear because she's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think that doesn't work is on the ship, where Banner has already, like, he's running around, he's fighting Thor, and it's like, Barton's loose, can someone get him? And she's down, huddled, like, shaking back and forth in the bottom of the ship, and then she's like, I'll go get him. I didn't, you know, every time I watch that scene, I'm like, I don't think that, like, under pressure, I don't think that's what Natasha would be doing.
Yeah.
I never liked it. I get being scared of the Hulk, but, like, you knew it was happening. He's already gone. He's left you. And you're just sitting there rocking back and forth. I don't know. I just never liked that scene.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see that. I mean, like, I guess I don't know if I ever noticed that she's just, like, acting catatonic.
She's all sweaty.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I get being real freaked out for sure.
Yeah. Oh,
but
sure.
But definitely, like, future and Natasha. It's also the first time probably she's ever dealt with something like that. Like, it's kind of a Tony moment, right? Like, Tony has an entire movie where he's basically in the fetal position because he saw the Chitauri for the first time and saw something he couldn't explain and it was more powerful than him, you know? And so I think in that moment, she's been through a lot, but it's all been like spy stuff up till now. This was her first moment where she's like, okay, I'm in the world of gods and monsters now. Maybe it would take her a minute to collect herself. But yeah, it is definitely not the Nat we know in the future who's like, yeah, go to another planet, sacrifice myself off a cliff. I'm good. I'm solid. Just tell me whatever I need to do.
Growth.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I one thing I kind of noticed in this is that like thing with her and Banner. In Age of Ultron, clearly there's like a romantic subplot between them. And I always thought that came out of nowhere. But watching this movie, like it's clear that Joss or was putting them together in a lot of scenes. Like even if they're not like romantic in this movie, Joss did this thing, not just with them, but with multiple of the characters so that there could be these sort of like emotional and character payoffs. He did these things where like, throughout the movie, Loki and Thor are in a lot of scenes together. And then, like, Banner and Tony are in a lot of scenes together. And then, like, Tony and Cap are in a lot of scenes together. There's just certain little duos that you see. And you don't really see it with everybody. Like, you don't see a ton of, like, Thor and Cap or whatever. But, like...
Mm-mm. It's Natasha and Barton.
Yeah, but Natasha and Barton, of course. And then there's Natasha and Bruce are in a lot of scenes together.
And then it's good to be making the second Avengers film because you can start laying out things that you're going to do in that one that tie back into this one, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I know Joss Whedon is a controversial figure these days and has had a lot of pretty crappy things come out about him.
He's problematic. He's a problem.
But I hope that one day he can make amends for some of his past sins and come to make some more movies because I really do like. I've always loved his work.
It was a hard pill to swallow, man.
And it happens with a lot of the people who've been who've had similar things happen to their careers, where it's just like, man, damn, like you were so good. Like it's that whole, I think like it's a power corrupting thing where when people get that much power, they just sometimes they're just not handling it, and they do really shitty things.
I love the second Avengers movie. I think Ultron is more of a Joss Whedon movie than this one is. Because it's more like that. We really have jokes in that one. Like, you're doing the scenes that we've always talked about, like the movies that I want. That party that Tony has at his house might be one of my favorite scenes in the entire MCU. Everyone's just hanging out, having a good time. They do the let's all try to lift the hammer. Everyone but Steve is a little drunk. Like, come on. Love it. Yep. I could watch an Avengers Christmas movie with them just like decorating and getting ready and then having a Christmas party and then going to bed. Totally. And I would be first in line for a ticket.
Totally. I really love that movie. And those scenes you're talking about, like the scene in the Christmas party. It's not Christmas, is it?
It's not. I would like just to see a holiday Avengers episode where all they do is have a holiday party.
Yeah, yeah.
And they decorate and they exchange gifts and have a white elephant and fight over it.
Me too. Yeah. I want them to do so bad. I really want them to do that. But I really love that scene. But even back to this one, like, there's so many of those scenes in this one where they're all just together and like them sitting around
the table.
Yes. Sit around the table in that first scene where the scene where Cap says, you know, oh, I got that reference. Like that meme that we pass around still to this day. I love that scene. And then later you get them arguing over the staff. And that's a whole nother, like, it's just them in a room chatting, but man, it's good and fun.
So
and like,
good.
So fun.
Banner has my favorite line in that when he's like, Fury's like, Dr. Banner, we need to escort you. He's like, back to where? You rented my room. Like, get him, Bruce. And he's making this face, and then a little, you know, he's holding I love when he picks up the scepter.
Yeah, me too. Oh,
it's
gosh.
Just so, you know, you don't see it happen. You have no idea what's going on. He doesn't know what's happening. And then they never even talk about the fact that the scepter was what was doing that.
Yeah. But
for some reason, we all just kind of knew.
Well, we know because there's that beauty. Again, it's Joss Whedon, man. It's Joss Whedon. Because they do that beautiful shot where they show the stone, and then all of them arguing, but the camera focuses on the stone. So that means the audience knows something's going on with that stone. And then it does this camera move where it flips upside down to show them arguing upside down, which to me is it's the director saying, like, the stone is what's doing this, and then showing them upside down is showing, like, the stone is turning them. Like, the stone is, like, changing them. The stone is inverting them. It's causing them to have this battle. Instead of a team, they're becoming this, like, people that are about to fight. And I love that. It's just this moment of beautiful camera work that, like, really clearly makes it happen without the cheesiness of them going, like, wait, I think we're arguing because of the scepter. You know, it's just, like, really beautiful. Yep. And then the scene continues, and then he grabs it, and you're like, put it down, Bruce.
Or use the scepter. Don't turn into, you know, if that makes you feel better, don't do that, and don't turn into the Hulk.
Yeah. The scepter is less damaging than you being the Hulk.
There's so many quips in that earlier scene, though, when they're all sitting around the table, when, like, Bruce and Tony are talking, and Cap's like, that's English? Like, it's just going and going, and it's so fast, and it's so well-written and so well-acted that it just seems natural. And that's what I like about it.
I completely agree. And it makes a rewatch, like, all the better. This movie, while I still think it's kind of, it's simple in its characterizations, it's just got so much going on, and so many characters get their moments, and so many moments happen rapid fire that it's so rewatchable. Like, I've seen it lots and lots of times, but I'm still, like, sort of surprised by certain lines. Like, oh, he said that in the background. Oh, he said this. And look at the face Banner's making. Like, it's just so much going on the screen, and so many great actors, like, living in those moments, you know?
Yeah, I love it.
It's really, really great. Well, if you want a great moment to live in, you should get some Miracle Made sheets. Miracle Made sheets are freaking awesome. Did you know that a traditional bed sheet can harbor tons of bacteria? It can lead to acne, allergies, a stuffy nose, and it's just gross. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, eco-friendly bedding such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent 99% of bacteria and require 3 times less laundry. They're silver infused. It's like a NASA thing that they're using, and it makes the bed sheets self-cooling and self-cleaning, and the self-cooling nature of them makes them, like, feel like the highest end of hotel sheets. Like, I really, really love these sheets.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, been a very hot sleeper. These have been great for us because Ken is not, and my husband is not, and I can wake up like a sweat monster. I'm like, I'm so sorry, and I don't know, it's just been recent, you know, I'm getting older. It just happens. It happens to the best of us. And these have actually really worked. And I have tried linen sheets, expensive ones, which just end up being scratchy. Mm-hmm. I have tried all kinds of stuff. I've tried like certain kinds of pajamas, less pajamas, nothing works. These actually do work. And I'd put my seal of approval on them because I was pretty impressed. They're a miracle.
They are a miracle. So if you want to experience the miracle for yourself, go to trymiracle.com/MCU to try it today or gift it to someone special this holiday season. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Save up to 40%. And if you use our promo code MCU at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get your full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/MCU and use code MCU to claim your free three-piece towel set and save 40%. Again, that's trymiracle.com/MCU to treat yourself, a friend, or loved one this holiday season. All right, turning back to Avengers. Man, it's such a different view of Loki after watching the Loki series and seeing, like,
it is crazy
knowing that this is the Loki, this is the same Loki, you know what I mean? Like, he departs here to head in both those directions, and it really makes the glorious purpose of Loki that we saw at the end of the series really feels like it makes the other Loki feel really sad, honestly. Like, thinking about the two versions. Yeah. And, like, I've always thought it was tragic. He sort of just turns his life around and does a nice, like, sort of is starting to work on Thor's team, and then he dies.
And, I know.
And in this one, just knowing the, like, that's the two divergent paths we get to see him take from this movie, I just think it's such a cool thing to watch this movie and think about all the ways he changes. And when he stands in front of those men, like in Germany, and that guy stands up and says, "There are always men like you."
I love that scene.
I love that scene.
That guy was done with it. It was like mentioning social commentary without having to be like really clear about it.
Yeah.
And then Captain America shows up. He's like, "When I was in Germany last, I had a guy." I know. I was like, "Oh, Cap, you didn't even need to say, like, we all knew what he was talking about, man. We get it. You fought Hitler. I know. But did you? Or were you just against Red Skull?"
Yeah, he really just fought Red Skull. I mean, he did punch Hitler over 200 times.
200 times. Yeah. Yep. But this is the most evil we have Loki, I'm pretty sure. This is the most evil Loki is in, I think, any of the properties that we see him in. Because he kills so many people in the opening scenes. And then even when they keep trying to bring him back, like, you see that moment where we see our Loki for 1 second when he's on the top of the building. Like, it's just too far. I can't go back now. Mm-hmm, and Thor's exactly. Like, "No, you can come home." And then he stabs him.
Well, they say he's killed 80 people over 2 days or whatever.
That was, yeah, but now look at New York.
Yeah, and then there's New York. And I love that scene because Thor says he's adopted.
He's adopted.
It's just such a good, funny line. Yeah, Loki just has so many great lines in this movie, and he's just so evil. And it's hard because in the next movie, there's a lot more complexity added in Thor the Dark World, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But then it sort of all gets undone by him sitting on the throne at the end. Like, you feel like there's all this complexity being added, and then it's a trick.
Well, he's like, "Matt, are you never not going to fall for that?"
Exactly. exactly.
Well, I love how Lucy, like, 1 second he's like, you know, when him and Thor are having the fight on the mountainside thing, whenever he's talking about Asgard, he's like, "I'm the rightful king of Asgard." It's like, baby, you were never at any point the rightful king of Asgard. But then the second you bring up Odin, he's like, "He's not my dad." Pick a lane. Like, you cannot have both of those.
Yeah, for sure. Ah, that puny god.
That puny god. I love that that's how he gets taken, like, defeated at the end. Mm-hmm. Just ragdoll.
Yep. It's
just ragdoll. Perfect. You're not going to bully me.
It's perfect. It's so silly and over the top, like, comic booky, cartoony, but it, like, works somehow and it fits. And it is like, he thinks himself a god, and this is like the lowest creature to him. He thinks of him as like someone to use in his plan. He's a monster, and then he just takes him out and says, "Puny god." It's like a really, really satisfying moment.
Yeah. He's like, ugh.
I never really, like, there's a lot of battles in this movie, and one that I never really thought about was when Cap lands and fights Loki just for the two of them for a minute, because Cap has only really ever fought one super soldier, and that's Red Skull. So he's used to being able to beat anyone he goes up against pretty easily. And then Loki is expecting no resistance from Earth. He tells Thanos and his buddy there that
the Mouth of Sauron.
He tells them, like, they're easy people to walk over. And then that's the moment where Loki goes, "Oh crap, there's this guy." They both have that "oh crap" moment, and it's a very short moment before Tony shows up. But I thought it was really neat to see them both go, "Oh wait, I'm not, this is like another super soldier, which I've only faced once. And then him being like, oh, I did not expect this kind of resistance from these people.
I love that scene. I love, we have to admit that Loki's gala outfit for Germany is just top notch. Like, oh, he looks so good. And I love that he's just like, he always looks good when he comes to Earth. He knows what people are wearing and he just glamors it. Cause I was laughing. I was like, wait a minute. He glamored that scepter to look like a walking stick.
Yes, it's beautiful. He's like, Tony calls him out. He's like, this is opening night, and Loki, he's a full tilt diva.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, wait, I'm talking about myself.
Yes, it's so good.
As well.
It's so good.
Son of a bitch. And another funny thing I noticed is like how much Eric Salvig, like, even though he's on the wrong side because he's glamored, is just having the time of his life. Because he's gotten so much knowledge. He's like, hey, guy, what's up? This thing is showing me so much cool stuff. And Loki's like, I know, isn't it great? And I'm like, you guys are fun.
Yeah.
You guys are just fun.
Yeah, it's a fun scene. Like, them just being reveling in... They're not like zombie they could have easily made them like zombies who are just doing Loki's bidding. But like, making them like happy to be there gave it a different feel. It was cool.
Yeah. I had a question. When Thor shows up, you would kind of think that Tony would already know who Thor was because he did his homework. Remember, he read all the stuff. And if you look, when he puts the Avengers thing up, it's Cap, it's Thor, it's Banner. So it is funny that everyone's acting like they didn't know who he was when he comes in all full tilt. Like, I did my homework and none of you did, blah, blah,
is
blah.
Is Thor in that scene? Because I didn't think that...
He is.
Okay. Well, to me, that's kind of a mistake because, like... They go around and pick everyone else up. So it's kind of like, who's on the team? And it's the other ones. Thor shows up and is an antagonist, you know, to them. Like, he's not there to be that. So that's weird that he's in that scene when they're showing off who's going to be on the team.
Because it would make sense that they would have the stuff on Thor because Coulson's there and blah, blah, blah. Thor the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess they just kind of... forgot about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a flaw that I've never noticed, but I think that is a flaw, I think.
10% of me is afraid that I'm wrong, but it's in my notes, so I had to have seen it, and I will go check as soon as I'm off here.
Yeah, no, I was pulling it up.
Because for a second, I'm a little... Now I'm like, well, wait a minute. I don't always trust what I remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do kind of feel like I wrote it down for a reason.
Well, is it...
Wouldn't Tony know about Thor from his homework, so I must have seen something.
I'm pulling it up. I pulled it up. Yeah, he's there. He's definitely there.
Oh, okay, cool. Woo!
Another thing they did from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. they say an agent is a level 7 agent. And he says, he's like, I'm level 6. I know all about blah, blah, blah. And then a revived Coulson who's been brought back to life steps forward out of the shadows and says, welcome to level 7. And it's like, it's pretty cheesy. Well, it's undercut. It's that great Joss Whedon thing, because he steps out of the shadows and says, welcome to level 7. And then he goes, sorry, it was a dark corner and I've always wanted to do that.
Oh, it's, yeah. It's really good.
But that's so level 7 is like the level of agent that he is. And so in this, they say like, we've got a level 7 situation or something like that. And so like, they just take all these.
Oh, yeah.
It's purely like the show taking things from the movie and using it like as their fuel, you know? But it's cool how many little things they did like that to like connect to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a lot of fun.
Did they have what's the ship that they were on? The helicarrier, right? And that goes on to be its own villainous character coming up later. The helicarrier carriers, right?
Wait, the helicarrier? Well, the helicarriers, the helicarriers are just the ships that S.H.I.E.L.D. uses. But in Winter Soldier, they have an update to the helicarrier that becomes Project Insight.
Yeah, it's Minority Report.
Yeah,
it's
great. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
But I was laughing. I was like, you idiots, when they're like on there and both Cap and Banner are like, is this a sub? There are 25 planes on deck. Like, yeah, it's not a sub. There are airplanes all around you.
Yeah.
Like, did you really think that was going down underwater with all of those expensive jets on there?
I mean,
fellas.
I guess it's just as plausible because it could have like... a shell could have come over it or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's just as plausible as, like, we're going to fly now. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
It's either way. It's, like, crazy.
Oh, yeah. How many birds do you think that ship kills?
Oh, so many birds.
Because they're so hidden.
Yeah. This bird is just going right into it.
The other part of that scene, I love that Banner is just so worried that everybody's gossiping about him. Everyone's like, hey, great to see you. He's like, really good. Good to see you too. What have you heard about me? Well, what else have you said? Has anybody been talking about me? What are you all thinking about me? I'm like,
he's worried. It's really funny. Funny way to view it. Like, he's like worried about the gossip that's been going on around the ship.
Yeah,
about,
he's just
about him.
Twisting his hands like, is that all you've heard about me? It's like, no, we obviously know what you are.
You know, it's funny. Selvig builds in the failsafe, you know, and they may have that nice moment for him to be a hero that he built in the failsafe. But also, like, that means they do have their minds about them to some degree when they're in their, like, taken over form and, like, mm-hmm. they're all running around killing everybody or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't know if Barton... I'm trying to think if Barton actually kills people. He definitely shoots. He definitely tries to kill
people. He killed a couple people, I think, in Germany.
Yeah. 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 So I was just curious if, like it's kind of weird. That line gives is a great moment for Selvig, but it kind of throws Hawkeye under the bus. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, that's why he's, like, super upset about it. He's like, I killed all those people. And she's like, don't do that. You know that wasn't you. It's like, maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit you? It might have been a little bit you. I will say, to give him some headcanon out, is that, like, Selvig was under Loki's control for a long time. So, like, maybe he'd, right. like... Because ever since the end of Captain America or whatever. So, like, maybe Selvig had, like, had time to work up a resistance to it or something.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know.
That's a good way to think about it.
Headcanon, baby!
Headcanon. One of the best scenes in this movie is Tony versus Thor, though, in the park.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Doth your mom know you wear her drapes?
And I love that even though Loki and him are having such an argumentative moment and, like, everything horrible's going on, when he's about to fight with Tony, he still looks up for some kind of, like, are you watching this? You gonna watch what I'm gonna do? And then Loki smiles down at him a little bit. You know, like, they have, like, a little brotherly moment, like, I'm coming back to you, don't worry, but let's watch me beat this guy up. And he's like, go get him.
That's really cute. That's really cute. I hadn't noticed that. Yeah, I think that's really a funny scene. It sort of kind of reveals that, like, Loki just chilling there. Like, Loki could definitely have gotten away, but, like, it's clear that he wants to get captured. I know that they eventually figure it out, and I was, like, watching.
Steve is the only one from the beginning. Like, from when they get there, like, he doesn't want to just be here. And they're like, no, we don't need to worry about Loki. But you're right. Like, Steve says it, and nobody else listens to him.
Yeah, yeah, he's the only one who wants to be here. Like, there's multiple points where Loki could have done something to try to get away or something, and he doesn't. And it just becomes really clear that, like, it should have gotten clearer sooner. Like, and mm-hmm. I know I'm looking at the movie with, like, the... You know, I have the glasses of knowing or whatever.
Yeah. How it no, ends, it's but. The set. He's just like, I give up.
speaking of Loki, so they had that scene. Oh, they have multiple scenes where he talks about sentiment. He's like, this is base sentimentality, talking to Black Widow. And he clearly thinks that, like, sentiment and, like, caring about someone or something is, like, a weakness, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just interesting because that's the thing in Loki. He goes on to care about these people at the TVA, and that's the thing that makes him really change. And so I just thought that was an interesting, like, just, like, he says it multiple times in the movie, how, like, sentiment is a terrible thing. I forget.
He says it to Thor when he's right in his face after he stabs him.
That's it. That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. And so this, like, connection to other people is just, like, this sentiment that he can't, like, get behind. And he's like, this is useless. You need to, like, just, it's all about power. As he tells him, like, you're ill-suited for the throne because of this, because of the way you think about this stuff.
Yeah, he's like, you think you're better than mm-hmm. them. He's like, well, yeah, duh. He's like, the throne is not suited for you then, brother.
Mm-hmm. This may be a totally, like, long shot, like, probably isn't true, but there's the scene in the car chase when they're chasing Loki and he's on the one car and all the shield cars are chasing him.
Oh, the jeeps?
Yeah, and they go through, like, an underground area, and there's just a second where there's two lanes and they're kind of shooting at each other across the lanes, very Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom in the mine cars. Like the fact that there's like kind of two lanes and they're sort of next to each other and they're firing back and forth. I just thought it was, like, really reminded me of it. And it's a stone building too. So it just feels like it was like almost an intentional reference to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom with the mine car scene. Fun. I don't know if it was, but it seemed like it.
It was a good introduction for Hill too, because you can see that she's, you know, she's all business.
Yeah.
She's a little too much all business.
The only person to ever dodge a Clint Barton bullet.
Well, that's what I was laughing. I go, wow, I guess Clint Barton can't shoot a gun for shit.
Right?
I never realized that.
Yeah. He's Hawkeye. He's the best aim, and he fires like four bullets and misses her.
Misses, I guess, because he was under someone else's control.
But I guess that doesn't really matter
because he gets all of those in on the ship, so never mind.
Gosh, that arrow he fires from the Quinjet that like turns in the wind and goes inside the helicarrier is so
he
cool.
Bends the bullet. What was that movie? Wanted?
Yeah, Wanted. He bends it for sure. Okay, I got a bunch more notes. I got a few more things I want to get to, but like before we do, let's talk about my favorite new drink that is like keeping me going these days. I freaking love it. AG1, everybody. AG1 is this supplement drink that carries tons of vitamins and minerals and probiotics, and it like really kicks off my day every freaking day. I first gave it a try because the podcast, I'd seen it advertised, and I'd always thought it would just be one more thing to add to my routine, and I didn't do it. But the great thing about it is it makes me feel really energized, and my body, it's a drink instead of like pills, and my body just seems to digest it better, and I just feel better all day. I was able to cut out a ton of other supplements from my daily routine. So I thought for a while, I was like, no, I don't want to order that. I don't order it because it would add another thing. But instead, it simplified my routine, and I am freaking loving it.
Yeah, it's definitely really, really good if you're someone like me who eats like horribly. Don't mean to during the week. You just get busy. You're working. You're tired. You know, I've had pizza for the last two nights in a row, and I'm like, I probably should have some kind of mineral or vitamin or nutrients in me that's not just cheese and bread. And that's where I feel better when I drink my AG1 after, you know, a weekend of terrible eating, especially around the holidays. It's so important to stay healthy.
Like, it's not hard to get calories into your body during the holidays, but the kinds of food that are around are like not always the most nourishing. And
cookies,
it's really good.
And cakes and everything.
So many cookies and cakes.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice.
But you got to balance that with this wonderful AG1. Not only does AG1 deliver my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more, but it's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in with water once a day, every day. AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to welcome them as a new partner on the show. Here is your chance to start every day this season with a gift to yourself. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/MCU. That's drinkag1.com/MCU. Check it out. I don't even know how to get into what I have so many other little notes that I just like love, and I don't have like a good like narrative way to reach them, so I don't know. I can just run down things.
I'm with you. Right. Mine is just like,
you too. If you got anything left,
like, shut up. Just tons of stuff just like you. So the more you go through them, I'm sure we'll probably have a lot of the same ones, but it is just like Budapest joke. Like, that's where this came from, or this is where this joke started.
So
and
many.
And it never stopped.
So many, not only jokes, but like character elements. Like, that we talk about it all the time, how Tony's not the one to lay down the wire. Like, that's like a line we use all the time to talk about Tony's arc.
But he does it in this one.
Well, the thing, he does it in this one, and then is like, that's his arc. Like, he's learning to be sacrificial through all these movies, and like, he definitely, like, this is his third movie, and he, like, makes that decision, and then, of course, in the end, does it again. But, man, love that. I love that this movie starts with that, like, I hate to say this, because it sounds almost insulting, but I think, like, the over-the-top costuming and, like everything in the opening of the movie with the villain monologue and like the Tesseract and like Loki receiving the scepter. It's like out of Power Rangers. It's so over the top. Like the
what will they do?
It really does feel like a child's movie, and I don't dislike it at all, but it feels like a lot of the other movies, they didn't soften the comic bookiness of it. That's one thing that Marvel doesn't tend to do. Like, Captain America is Captain America, and Thor is Thor, but, like, I guess Thor is very over the top with the costuming, but I feel like Iron Man, Captain America, and Hulk, up to this point, everything's been pretty muted in the costuming department. Nothing like too crazy, but that opening.
Cap's pretty spangly.
Oh, yeah. But he's less spangly in the Captain America movie, though. He's got the sort of muted colors with the brown. Like, they make a joke of his super spangly colors in the dance routine or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then they go on to give him sort of a muted suit to take out into battle, you know? And so, like, that first scene just always stands out to me as, like, am I watching Power Rangers right now? But, like, not in a bad way, but just, like, in an over-the-top way, you know?
Yeah. If we would have found out that Rita Repulsa was behind all this, I wouldn't have been surprised. Yeah. Not Thanos.
Totally. Like, that guy you called Sauron's mouth or whatever, like, he is totally, like, a Rita Repulsa, like, flunky. Like, it's weird.
You dare threaten, you know?
it's not too far off. The voice isn't too far off either.
Yeah. Oh, it's very funny. Very funny.
I love the efficiency of storytelling of the little girl running to Banner get him to come.
Meaty Baba. She's so cute.
Yeah, she's so freaking cute. And, like, he's like, oh, they make spies start that small now? And she's like, I did. It's just, like, so well done. Like, it shows who he is because he cares and wants to help this little girl. It shows who Natasha is, the kind of war she's fought, and the kind of character she's been her whole life. Like, it's just such an efficiency of storytelling. I think it's so rad.
Well, that must have been the scariest part for them releasing this movie, is how people were going to react to their new Hulk, because it hadn't been great. Everybody's always had something to say about the Hulk movies, and it's like, now we got Mark Ruffalo, which wouldn't have been my first pick back then to be the Hulk.
Oh, sure.
I probably wouldn't have thought the guy from 13 going on 30 would make a great Bruce Banner. But he nailed that. Like, he nails the beginning. You believe him. That's what I'm talking about, getting the good actors to do these. It's so important.
It really is.
They're believable. And I think that was a perfect intro for what was, you know, going to be our Bruce Banner. And I think he did a really good job throughout this one, because he's a little bit more jokey now, like, especially when we get all the way to She-Hulk. Like, it's kind of like, hey, yay, guys, hey, you know?
She-Hulk and Ragnarok, too. Like, he obviously is, like, leaning towards the jokes a little more. But, like, this one, man, when he changes and Nat is next to him, the Hulk...
Yeah, we're okay, right? We're okay.
The Hulk looks at Nat in, like, with shame on his face.
Yeah.
Because it's still enough Banner there to be like, ashamed of what he's about to do. And
I'm about to rip you from limb to limb. I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
girl, right?
It's crazy, man. Oh, what a good scene.
I love that too. When she gets the way, she's just flipping all over the place to get away from him.
Mm-hmm. I also love about the Hulk that the Hulk is a character, and without ever saying this, but like what we see with Ragnarok and what we see in this movie, he's a character that's like, as a character, isn't trying to do what's right necessarily. He's just like trying to fight. Like, he wants to smash. And so in the Chitauri scene, he smashes the Chitauri because that's like, he's on a team and he's like, he doesn't fight the good guys. He fights the bad guys because they're what's fun to smash. But as soon as he's left alone in a room with Thor, he punches him for no reason.
He punches him? Yeah, he's like, that's for the ship, man. I don't think I forgot.
Yeah, well, it's also like, you never... Oh, yeah, that's a good point, that they fought hard on the ship, and so there's still some animosity there. But, like, Hulk is not there. He doesn't have Banner's brain, and he's not there to fight the good fight. He's just, like, doing, I don't know, his own thing, and it, like, works out. And it's kind of like we've talked about with Hulk in the past, just, like, you just got to aim him and fire him at the bad guys at some point.
Well, and then talk about such a different transformation then to the beginning of Age of Ultron with that Hulk that we see who is on the team, who is working in more of a unit, who is being talked down by Nat and able to change back and living that in-between life.
Yeah.
And I wish we could have gotten to see that, like, in I know not in between movies, we have too many movies going on, you know, as it was, but like her training, like him training with them as the Hulk or something, like they had to figure out that she could do, you know, sun's getting real low at some time.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, I would love to see that, but at the same time, it's like, do we need to see that? And like,
no, I just need it for me.
Yeah. I want to see everything. Like, I want every moment in this universe to be actually like laid out for me. But
that's when we should have had the TV shows, like Avengers Academy during the week, you know, totally. What everybody's doing.
Totally. There's an amazing, you spoke about how like so many things in this movie, like lay out what goes forward and things we think about all the time. The scene with Tony and Pepper, I think, is one of the most important scenes to show us their relationship, like the 12% conversation and just them being together. We really don't see them together much. They kiss at the end of Iron Man 2. Then they're not together after this movie? Or is it after Age of Ultron?
No, she's not in Ultron either.
That's right. Because he went back to his suits. So she's in Iron Man 3. We get to see him, like, he gives it up for her, and then he's back in the suits. And they're really not together again until Infinity War or Endgame.
I guess Spider-Man Homecoming he proposes at the end of?
That's right, he does. Yeah. So we know they're back together, but we just don't get a lot of time with them after, like, the first Iron Man, almost. Second Iron Man, I guess. And so I just really, really love that scene to kind of showcase what their relationship is like, you know?
Yeah, he's like, can you call your mom and ask if you can bunk over?
Yeah, it's really cute. And then I love that at the end, the phone call to her, because that scene works so well and they seem so comfortable together, and it's a relationship I want to work because of that scene, you know?
Yeah.
It makes that call to her like so much more powerful at the end.
I know, she doesn't answer and you're like, oh man.
Well, then you were talking about things like wanting to express something on screen without getting too cheesy. We've talked about that a couple times in this episode, and like, that's a thing. I think if he'd answered and had a conversation, it might have gone too far into the like cheesy.
They did it later and it worked, so it was good to kind of hold that back.
Yeah.
Well, she calls him when he is flying to space in Infinity War.
Yes.
Remember us? Oh, God. We were all like, she's going to say she was pregnant. I know it. But yeah, it's like the right time and place to do it. And I thought, yeah, I agree with you. It's good. Her watching and being distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He had to do that on his own.
Yeah, for sure. I really like how in this movie they introduce the idea that Cap is struggling with his, like, position as Cap. Like, he's Captain America, and he starts to say like, things have changed, like basically, and he points out like, isn't the Star Spangled look a little old fashioned, and he says, I think we need a little old fashioned right now. But it's clear that he's like seen the history of America and where it's gone, and like, he's starting to question like whether just working on the side of America is always the right thing. And then of course we get the Hydra reveal in Cap 2, and it's like, That's all started right here with these sort of seeds of doubt that he has about S.H.I.E.L.D. and about America, and whether he can be a man who's just taking orders. And in this movie, he tells the crew, he's like, we have our orders, because he just like, he misses the comfortable nature of knowing good from bad, and like knowing that the people that are telling him what to do are telling him the right thing. And that plays into the whole idea that like, when Civil War comes, he's like, no, I am like the best hands to keep the decision making in are our own, because I've been letting the decisions be made for me for 100 years and it doesn't always work. Like, I need to be a part of the decision making process.
Yeah. Which is, it's so good for a character like that to have flaws, because in this, he's kind of, you're like, you're being real uptight, Cap. I'm like, you're getting on my nerves a little bit with this whole, we have to follow orders, and that's not part of the thing, and don't even poke him, you're putting us all in danger. I'm like, first of all, let Bruce Banner speak for himself, you know, and he's like, I wouldn't be on here if a little prick could bother me, or whatever he said. But yeah, but then you see it kind of like, you can see the beginning of the path that he's going to go down. But then for him, just like, that's why when we get to Civil War, it's also just so obnoxious that it's like, there's no leeway when they're trying to get to the end of, you know, trying to solve the position that they're at. When we get there, And that's where it starts to get frustrating again, too. But we'll get there when we get to Civil War.
Yeah, we will.
But you could see that back and forth. And he just quit. Like, in this one, he just can't stop. Like, when he's like, oh, is this the first time you lost a soldier? And Tony, like, screamed at him.
He's like, I'm not a soldier.
Like, we're not soldiers. Yeah. Like, well, I'm a soldier. Coulson's kind of a soldier.
When we talked about last week with all the montages, how much they use the montages in Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, like, I really appreciated the montages because when Cap starts fighting in this one, when he goes and fights Loki, and then later on when he's, like, doing some of the just fighting he does, when he jumps out of the plane, like, it just all makes Cap feel well lived in. Like, he's not new to battle. He's not new to any of this. He's the world's first superhero. So, like, he's right. Just, he's done, if they hadn't included those montages, particularly the ones where he's actually going on mission after mission after mission, it would have felt like, oh, well, Cap fought Red Skull and then was frozen, and we don't really know. You know, it's like they did a really good job. The montages are so important, not only for that movie, but like going forward. I think they're really, really important.
Yeah, agreed.
There's a line where when they're arguing, he's I think it's Cap says, "Is everything a joke to you?" And Tony says, "Funny things are."
Yes, he's so snippy.
He's so snippy.
Quips.
Yeah, and this is kind of what we were talking about last week with him, like, not really being in the moment. He's so smart, and he's thinking all things at the same time that, like, he's outside the moment. Like, he sees the humor of the moment, even though they're in the middle of a terrible situation. Like, he kind of always does, and that's just a part of his, like, humor and his character, and I just love that.
Well, and one thing they don't talk about in this movie that much is how jealous he is of Cap and the time that he had with his father. And yes. We don't get into that until later, is there is this underlying thing that Cap doesn't know anything about, you know?
Yeah, I was actually shocked that they don't mention his father and when they do meet. Like,
they don't talk about it to each other. Yeah. He's like, that's the guy my dad's raving about. And it's like, but they don't talk about it.
Yeah. And I know they do in future movies, but I really wish they'd said something about it in this one, because it does seem like Tony would immediately, but maybe it is that jealousy where he doesn't want to admit that this is an icon that he grew up with, you know?
He's like, my dad liked you more than me. Wah.
Yeah, he's not the fanboy that Coulson is. He doesn't want to come off that way. He wants to come off cool and collected and like, you are the first superhero, but I'm the modern day guy. Like, I'm the superhero.
Yeah.
My last note I have is, I was watching, so like anytime there's something that pivots on one thing, it makes me think about the what if. It pivots to really close. And I was thinking about what if when I was watching this, like how it's coming. And I was watching him fall out of the sky. When Tony falls out of the portal and just barely makes it, just barely misses.
Yeah, Hulk.
Yeah, I love that. I love when Hulk wakes him up.
I know. Well, that's because it gets a little bit like he was there enough and present enough to be like, I'm going to catch him.
Yeah.
Because he was going to kill himself for us.
Totally. But yeah, and that's the thing, like Hulk does have this like sort of honor among the people he's battling with. Yeah. But something that I thought of as he's falling through that portal and then it just becomes space. Like he disappears, it just becomes space. I really would love to see the what if episode where he missed it. And he ends up
that'd be cool.
Out in space, like kind of like what they did with T'Challa, where like they picked up T'Challa instead of Star-Lord. But like,
yeah.
Let Tony at the end of 2012's Avengers, like he misses it and he's out in the cosmic area and just has to like, he'd be like on a journey to get home to Pepper, you know, like that'd be really, really cool. And like seeing Tony navigate the like politics and technology and all of that of the galaxy as he's making his way back to Earth. I think that would be a really great.
I feel like we kind of get that in Endgame.
We do. I want to see him like interact with multiple like different cultures and species and sort of like, what if he encountered the Kree way back then? And like he encounters Thanos' armies again. He's like running from maybe the Chitauri are chasing him because they see him run from that like battle after he blows up their ship. And so they're like chasing him through the galaxy and he's trying to like shake him while he's on his way home. I don't know. It just seems like it could be really fun. I'd like to see Tony in space more, basically.
I was like, at least we got some of it.
I can say it's deeper than that, but I just want to see Tony out in space.
I like the end. The end goes on, like, it is a little while. The end is a bit montage-y, but I like they're playing the really nice music over it. It goes over and over, and then I love that they start building Avengers Tower at the end.
Yeah.
You know, my little nerd heart almost exploded. And then we see Thanos, and that's when we find out for the first time that that's what's coming next, I feel, right? We didn't know it was going to be Thanos until this.
We didn't, and according to behind-the-scenes stuff and reports and interviews or whatever, like, they hadn't planned it till now. And so there's a few things that cue you into that, because, like, they talk about the staff and how it was powered by the Tesseract.
Mm-hmm. He's like, you would betray him or something.
Oh, I don't,
the mouth says.
Yeah, yeah, he does say that. But, like, I'm just talking about, like, the scientist bros talk about how the staff is powered by the Tesseract, which isn't true. They're two different Infinity Stones, we find out later. But, like, it's interesting because, like, apparently it goes that they didn't have that plan and Joss Whedon decided to add it. Like, I mean, obviously he got clearance, but it was, like, apparently a Joss Whedon decision to add Thanos to the end of this movie. So, like, the idea that the Tesseract and the staff are Infinity Stones was not in the plan. Like, that wasn't the plan until they made this movie, and they were like, that's a pretty good idea, Joss. And then they did it, and then they go on and, like,
oh, that's cool.
Ultron, of course they knew, because at that point they bring in they crush it and bring in the Mind Stone, and they, but it makes sense because that the Mind Stone is what's corrupting their minds throughout this whole movie.
Right. Well, that's why, remember we talked about it during Captain America, is it was confusing for me that was different stones, because they're both the same color, they're both blue, they had the space open portal thing, and it's hard to tell the difference between the Space Stone and the Mind Stone in this one, because it looks exactly the same. They're using the same colors.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. At this point, they hadn't planned that yet. So, like,
right,
it's
right.
Just...
And that makes more sense, yeah, yeah. Like, for why.
And there's one little out that, like, makes sense, and it gives them an out. Like, at one point, they're... So, they talk about how the staff is powered by the Tesseract, which is not true. But then, at one point, they're talking about the staff, and they... they're, like, examining it once they get it in their hands, and they say, see... The readings are very similar, and, like, it kind of shows that, like, that's the only reason they think it's powered by it, because it's, like, the similar energy, but it's just because they're both Infinity Stones, and they both have, cosmic energy or whatever.
Okay. That's fun.
It is. I love this movie.
My science nerd thing is, like, that nuke going off in space wouldn't have made any sound.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It bothers me every time.
I do really like how it blows out in a perfect sphere, though. Because, like, that would be, like, what would happen, theoretically. There wouldn't be a mushroom cloud, obviously, because there's no gravity. So, it's just, like, a perfect sphere starts engulfing the thing. I think it's so cool.
And then we get Stan Lee's cameo.
Yeah.
The superheroes in New York, give me a break.
It's so good. Oh, man, it's so good. All right. Well, guys, that's our Avengers coverage, I guess. Did you have anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's it. We're going to go get shawarma now, right?
Yeah, of course.
Shawarma happens now?
We got to take care of one more thing.
Oh, and then shawarma.
Yeah.
After.
I love that line. So that's even funnier to, like, I don't know. I'd forgotten that he says it twice. And, like, the shawarma after, it's like, it reminds me of, like, a little kid. Like, a little kid does that. Like, can we do this? Like, we gotta do this. And then this after? And, like, it's just really, really funny to me.
We're just gonna take the day tomorrow.
So good. So good. Well, Ashley, thank you for joining me on this journey through the Infinity Saga. We did phase one. We re-talked about all of phase one.
Crushed it. Crushed it's fun. It. I love this.
Yeah. I'm really, really happy to be doing it with you. Guys, we'll be back soon with more of our Infinity Saga rewatch. And we'll have another episode later this week. And then we'll be back to talk about Iron Man 3 next Tuesday. So, and then we...
Next week's Winter Soldier, right?
No.
What's next? Iron Man 3?
Iron Man 3. You got two more movies, unfortunately, till we got Iron Man 3 and Thor the Dark World. Real dark moment.
Okay.
You know, he's always talked about those being two of the worst. Like, I love Iron Man 3, and Jeff loves Thor the Dark World, but we argue about over those being which one's worse.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's funny that they're, like, right next to each other. Like, if
I have... there's a special place in my heart for Thor the Dark World, but it all ends the second Loki's out of the story.
Oh, yeah. I see that.
It gets so boring. I don't care anymore. That was a big mistake on
their part. I think you're right. I think it's largely because the villain's bad. But we'll talk about that in a couple weeks.
That's true. Oh, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back soon with more MCU. Please follow us, subscribe, join our Patreon, patreon.com/MCUcast. And yep.
Thanks, patrons. We love you.
We love you so much, patrons. Thank you. And we'll be back soon. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Hey, you just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/MCUcast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here. And a huge, huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3,000, my friends.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.